You can go ahead and call him.
Oh, gosh, what was the call?
Woolly papa ka, papa ka, papa ka ka. Woolly papa ka, papa ka, papa ka ka. Woolly papa ka, papa ka,
papa ka ka. She's Way Rochidachi here, and this is Chasing Cows and Sustainability, the radio journal following my summer of food on heritageradionetwork.org. Every other week, I let you eavesdrop in on my life working as an intern at the James Ranch here in Durango, Colorado, raising grass-finished beef and organic vegetables. This week's theme, Going in for the Kill, Stories of Slaughter. If it isn't obvious enough by its title, this is a graphic episode, but one I think you'll enjoy listening to. Thanks for tuning in.
If you guys get around them, I'll call them. I think they'll jump.
Dave calls the cattle from the seat of his camo-colored ATV, driving up from the pasture to the corral, while Joe and I follow behind the herd. The cattle are obedient and don't require much prodding, only the occasional ch-ch-ch-ch. All 138 cattle have to be moved up to the corral and penned in order for us to sort out the 8, which won't be returning to the field with the rest of them.
Yeah, there's some nice fat ones in there.
They're not ready. You have problems.
So I'm steering them in whatever direction they're going with the purpose of you and Dave in the corners picking off the 8.
We lead the cattle up the road to the large wooden pen, opening up the southern gate to a smaller pen where the unlucky 8 will be held. In order to isolate the fat heifers and steers for slaughter, you have to separate them from the rest of the herd individually. This requires a technique Joe likes to call the funnel. The three of us, he explains, will slowly close in on the steer or heifer from three sides, backing them into the gate, until they have no choice but to run from the herd into the separate pen. We walk into the pen and begin trolling for the so-called fats.
Jeez, we got so many cattle ready all of a sudden, Joe. Wow. Look at this one right here, Joe, in front of you, right straight ahead. Yeah, that steer.
Fats are identified by their smooth sides, with no protruding pelvic bones or ribs. They have a nice layer of fat all around them. Because heifers mature earlier, we identify more heifers than steers in this batch. Joe points to a candidate with his sorting stick, a long rod used to prod the cattle, while Dave looks on from the gate where he stands guard. Once identified, we follow the target, slowly letting the other cattle escape our funnel formation until only the single cow remains. We begin walking towards it, pressuring it back. That's when they can bolt, turning suddenly and running at you full force.
Okay, 4, right?
Yep. What did we get, 2 heifers and two steers?
So far, yeah.
That one right there at the hay.
As we're closing in on a heifer, it suddenly swivels around and charges just to my left. I run sideways and throw my hands up, making myself look as big as possible. I wave my arms and make swishing sounds. Eyes wide, the heifer stops and retreats, resigning herself to the fate of the isolated pen. Once we've counted off 8, we lead the rest of the cattle back down the gravel road to the pasture. There's 130 now.
So it's Tuesday morning, about 6:55, and I'm running a little late to meet Dave. Today is the day that we go to the slaughterhouse. So, I'm a little nervous about the whole thing. This is the day that I've both been looking forward to, really curious about, and also, for obvious reasons, a day I've been dreading like crazy. We're taking 8 fats, heifers and steers to the end, I guess.
I meet Dave at 7, jumping into the front seat of the pickup, and we make the 45-minute drive to Sunnyside Slaughterhouse, which has a rather ironic name, I think. When we get to Sunnyside, we back into the offloading area. We open the gate to the metal chute and secure it to the trailer door. Pedro, who works at Sunnyside, comes out to help push the cattle into the chute. He whistles gently, keeping them calm, while Dave prods them with his sorting stick from the back. Pedro works quickly, pushing them into 4 holding pens. The cattle are pretty relaxed, with only a few trying to turn around to move back towards the trailer. Once secured in the pens, Dave and I walk up to the main office and sign them in. I meet up with Sunnyside's manager, Ian, who's agreed to show me around, while Dave leaves to go have Eggs Benedict at the local diner. Ian and I suit up in white coats and hairnets and then make our way down to the kill floor.
This is She's Away. Did I get it?
Yeah,
got it. She's Away, this is Pedro.
Yeah, She's Away.
She's Away.
Yeah.
And so Pedro is our foreman down here on the harvest floor. She's Away does a radio show, so she's going to be recording a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, no? Stuff, yeah. So.
Yeah.
So she's going to make you famous.
Sunnyside is no ordinary slaughterhouse. Founded by Karen and Jerry Zink in 2002, after recognizing that the community desperately needed a local slaughterhouse in order to support the local food economy, Sunnyside is firmly committed to its principles of sustainability. The Zinks put a priority on humane handling and food safety, and they operate on a really small scale, rarely processing more than 10 animals a day. To put that into perspective, most slaughterhouses in the United States process 300 to 400 cattle per hour. The small operation size means the attention given to each animal is exponentially greater here at Sunnyside, and it also means that smaller producers are more easily accommodated. The James Ranch, for example, wouldn't be a high-priority customer at a standard industrial slaughterhouse, but they are here at Sunnyside. At Sunnyside, the cattle are dealt with one by one, and more like a traditional butchering, they are processed by Pedro and his coworker Jose from initial stun until final cut. In contrast, most slaughterhouses process their animals in a conveyor belt method, with each employee responsible for a single cut as the hoisted animal moves down the line. It is a mechanized and cold process. At Sunnyside, there is a respect given to the animal here that is apparent upon entering. Pedro is thoughtful and serious as he works, but he also whistles a light tune, which seems to make it feel much more humane somehow.
You know, these guys are doing, it's like art, basically. I mean, every animal is different, so it's not just like pulling a lever at a factory. You really have to think about every step they make and use a lot of, you know, split-second judgment in terms of, you know, go around this way, around that way, around the bone with their knife and that type of stuff. And so... So there's a lot of artistry on this side. But then...
Death is just a fact of life here. It is not something to grieve or to hide from. And so as I enter the kill floor, where the first heifer is already hoisted up by its leg, its jugular veins slit and its ears cut out, I find myself strangely at ease. It is calm. The room is white and sterile, but it does not lack a sense of humanity. These animals are not pets. They were bred to sacrifice themselves to my plate, but that does not mean they have to be degraded to being, quote-unquote, just meat. That heifer was a living, thinking being just a moment before, and now it's beginning its transformation from beast to beef.
So these guys will do this initial part of the dressing. We have two hoists. We have a two-hoist system. They're hooked up to load cells that give us weights. And so we get the live weight after we've stunned them, but before we've stuck or removed anything from the carcass. So
right.
We get the total weight of the animal, and then the first thing they do is they'll stick it, they'll bleed it, and then remove the head. And that's when they'll lay it on the cradle and start the pattern. He's going to do one here in a second.
Too often in this transformation, we as consumers ignore the kill that brought the beef to the table. I've seen my friends shudder as I describe the slaughter process, saying, God, I just don't want to think about it. I love animals, all the while cutting into their T-bone steak. Their tone seems to suggest that I don't love animals. But ignoring the animal behind the meat does not negate the reality of the situation, and it definitely does not make you an animal lover. To truly respect this heifer is to respect the sacrifice it made for me. If I eat a steak, I have to be okay with how it got to me. And if I'm not okay with it, I don't think I should be eating it.
So none of this is all, I mean, you obviously want to come see Harvest, so you don't have a problem with any of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've never been in a slaughterhouse facility, so it's new for me, but it's something that I've been wanting to do for a really long time.
Typically, it's not, it's kind of the unsavory aspect of this industry that people want to avoid, so.
It is loud on the kill floor, and Pedro and Jose work quickly. The second heifer is already in the knock box where she will be stunned. The chute squeezed tight to calm her.
This is where the patience really comes into play. He has to just wait for the right moment. Everything kind of has to line up for him to be able to get the right shot.
The stun gun is brought to the heifer's head and discharged. The heifer collapses and Jose quickly opens up the knock box to chain its leg.
You can see instantly it just knocks senseless. And I mean, that device isn't a very big device.
She thrashes, her movements involuntary, the clangs of her hefty body against the metal echoing loudly.
So now he's gonna get the jugular slit here.
That's the sound of the blood rushing out of the heifer's jugular vein. The blood is drained into a tub as the heifer's head occasionally jerks from one side to the other. Then the real work begins. The body is cut into, the skin pulled back, the head removed and dressed, and the heifer lay onto a cradle.
The device he just used there, that's called the weazened rod. They're separating the windpipe and the esophagus, so he's going to try, you'll see this whole process, the whole point of this is to not have any of the hide or any of the viscera, any of the guts, touch any of the meat. So. So he's removing the viscera, the paunch, the intestines, basically everything to do with digestion just got removed out. And then the lungs, heart, liver, all of the other major organs he's taken out now. That's a big old gallbladder on there. Jeez, the weight.
After the organs are dealt with and the hide removed, the heifer is hoisted up again and slid on the tracks that run along the ceiling to the back of the room, where Pedro uses a lift to bring him up to the height of the carcass and, with an electric-powered saw, bisects the body.
And he's literally center line of the vertebrae. So it's going to be a half of the vertebrae on either side.
After the bisecting cut is made, the two halves of the carcass are referred to as sides. They're pushed into a holding cooler, where they'll stay until the internal temperature of the side drops to less than 45 degrees.
So this is the chill cooler. You can feel that's a lot, there's a lot of air moving in here. We have about twice the fans we would normally have, so we'll roll everything in here on the day of process just to bring that carcass temperature down. We're trying to get it to below 45, so he'll roll it in here, and it'll sit in here for just today. By the end of business today, we'll roll all these carcasses in. They'll all be stamped and tagged, and then we'll roll them in here for aging.
Then they're moved into the main cooler, where they age for 21 days.
Man, when they're all lined up, you realize how big they are.
After aging, the sides are processed in a small room lined with electric saws, where they're cut up into specific cuts and ground into hamburger meat.
And that's that marbling you're talking about, intermuscular fat there. That's just, that's just great.
As I left the slaughterhouse, I felt strangely relieved. I had participated in the death of those cattle, and I was all right with that. I understood what had just happened, and it was okay with me. cave down by the fescue pasture. He looks worried. I think a steer's broken its leg, he says. I knew I should have cleaned the cattle guard. A cattle guard is a series of widely spaced metal bars dug into a roadway to discourage cattle from crossing. It seems the steer in question had tried to cross the cattle guard, which was overgrown with weeds, only to have its hind leg catch. The steer turned on it and completely snapped the bone. In the back of the herd, I see him limping. He is clearly in pain. It is really bad. We have to move the cattle, but the steer can barely walk and quickly collapses into the grass. He isn't going to get better, and left alone, he won't last long. He has to be slaughtered, and soon. The ranch hasn't had to slaughter a cow in the field in years, the last time being when a particularly rowdy steer snapped its leg trying to mount a heifer about 13 years ago. Dave calls Woody, his son-in-law John's brother, and the next morning Woody, John, John's son Gunther, old-time butcher Tom, and I all trudge out into the field to find the steer collapsed alongside the irrigation ditch.
That dirt steer's clear down in the north or upper corner of the fish ponds, you know, outside the fence across that big ditch. I was thinking there was a hot wire there, but it's off. So we're good. Yeah, and then we'll bring it over and gut it over here. A little bit of cottonwood pond probably or something. Woody's on his way down there right now. Okay, thanks, Dan.
Woody aims his gun and kills the steer in a single shot. We walk towards him as the sound of the bullet hangs in the air.
You can see the cow thrashing in the ditch.
That was a nice shot, Woody.
Never felt anything.
The steer's front legs are wrapped up in the barbed wire fence, so Tom makes a quick cut into its throat to begin the bleeding out process while we chain the steer's leg to lift him up and untangle him.
Hey, yeah. This is Tom.
Hi.
Hi, young lady. No, you don't want
The blood streams out into the irrigation ditch, coloring the clear water a fierce red. Attaching the chain to John's small track hoe, an excavator, the steer is hoisted up into the air and Tom makes a more decisive cut to the jugular vein. The steer's leg kicks and he moans. That moan was the singular haunting thing of the whole experience. It sounded so tragic and brutally honest, and yet it was actually kind of beautiful.
Mine was just taken all the way over there.
Yeah, dropping. Over by the hand, lady.
Kind of curious there.
Man, that's quite a break.
Whew. That was a bad break.
Yeah.
That's gonna be damn.
That's a pretty big steer.
Yeah.
I think 900 pounds or something.
John drives the steer back to a clearing near the cottonwood pond, while the rest of us follow behind. Tom bends down to wash his hands in the stream.
This is kind of primitive here. When I was in business, I had a kill truck.
At 77, he is a feeble-looking man, his back hunched, his eyes small, but his hands are capable. He's been working as a butcher for 75 years, first working as a slaughterhouse before going into business for himself.
Things have changed so much since I started, it's unbelievable.
How so?
When I started, there were no rules, no restrictions, no nothing.
I see.
I just pick them up and run them in the truck. I'd skin them and gut them and quarter them and put them in the truck, haul them back. I'd go out and butcher 5 to 8 beef a day.
Oh, wow.
By myself.
Wow.
course, I was a little younger. I don't move quite as fast as I used to.
Mm.
At 77, I guess I'm happy to be moving. I'd go nuts if I didn't have something to do.
Woody and Tom set to work. They follow the same process I had witnessed at Sunnyside, laying the kettle down on a makeshift cradle. They move more slowly, though, and Tom talks to the steer, calling it Sweet Pea. He is kind as he pulls the hide away from the flesh, delicate even. Woody and Tom's cuts are punctuated by the calls of birds and the whisper of a breeze. It is overcast and cool, and everyone is calm.
The idea to keep your knife sharp is to not cut any hair. So you always cut from the skin out, from the inside out.
Tom and Woody saw the sternum, opening up the chest cavity to expose the organs. Johnny lifts the carcass up again with the track hoe, and Tom and Woody remove the intestines and the stomach. The organs peel away from the steer's body easily.
I love the size of livers on cows.
How's it look?
Good. A little slippery.
The carcass now stands naked against the gray sky. A great, headless, legless monument of flesh.
So what kind of time frame are you working with?
The sooner you get it cooled down, the better.
You have to remember the temperature on this animal normally is 101 degrees. So there's no real rush, even in the cooler, like you're scared to death it's going to spoil, because even at 90 degrees, it's cooling down.
Here, you want water and power?
Huh?
You want water too?
Well, we could. But...
Johnny drives it back to his house for the final cut and cleaning.
Where are we headed, Dad?
The carcass is bisected with an electric saw and then loaded into the back of Woody's pickup, wrapped in tarps, to be taken back to Tom's cooler, where it will age for the 21 days. The men stand around the pickup and exchange a few last words. There's no real hurry. Everyone's sinking into their heels as they chat.
Yeah, I was hoping this was going to be a little fatter than it is, but...
That's fine.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
That's just like Scotty and Terry. They had them cows they went and killed. Well, we got to grain them for 45 days. Well, 45 days, you might as well whistle in the wind, baby.
Yeah.
Because that's not enough to get it through the system. It takes 90 days to get it through the system. So, well, we can't eat it. I cut that for him at grass-fed.
Yeah.
Man, that's the best beef we ever had. I said, no kidding.
It's that myth, you know.
Sunnyside is a really great slaughterhouse, but nothing compares to slaughtering in the field. Somehow, out there, that sense of ritual, maybe even sacredness, is retained. It just feels right doing it out in the open. The vultures will pick up the guts left discarded in the field. The hide will shrivel up in the sun. The blood will sink into the ground. And in 3 weeks, we'll be eating steak.